G'day, this is Tom Uren of Seriously Risky Business, and I'm here today with the Grok.
G'day.
First of all, I'd like to thank the Cyber Initiative at the Hewlett Foundation and also founding corporate sponsors Proofpoint for their support. And we got some listener feedback, Grok.
Right.
We spoke a while ago about different SIGINT agencies in different regions and how they have different cultures. And Andrew on Twitter responded and sort of took issue with one of the things we'd said, which was that Five Eyes agencies don't help specific individual companies. And the incident that Andrew was referring to was the allegations that the Australian government spied on the East Timorese cabinet to get advantage in negotiations around an oil and gas field in East Timor. So to be really clear, I don't have any secret knowledge about this. It's an alleged incident. The International Court of Justice looked at it and made a ruling, but it's also actually in front of the courts here in Australia, or some part of it is in front of the courts. So this is essentially all alleged. And what we're going to do is look at what's publicly known about this incident as a kind of hypothetical and change a few parameters and see what that tells us about the ethics of the situation and about the ethics of intelligence more broadly. So the backstory is that East Timor is a very young, very poor, very small country that until 2002 was actually part of Indonesia. And Australia spent several years in East Timor with a peacekeeping force. And East Timor's relationship with Indonesia is actually quite fraught. So although the allegations are that this spying was done for economic reasons, I think there's all sorts of reasons that the Australian government would actually want intelligence on the inner workings of the East Timorese government. So just for regional stability, we're invested in the country, how are relationships with the Indonesian government going now? Understanding all those things, I think, is like vitally important. But anyway, let's start there. So first of all, just at the very basic level, Grok, is bugging another government's cabinet room fair game?
Right. So I guess just to set the scene, we're basically talking about the great game. And a lot of it, you do tend to talk in terms of like players, things that are illegal, things that are sort of out of bounds. Is someone a fair target or is this reasonable? And all of that is, these are not rules of nature. They're not like, they're not natural laws that have been set down. Right.
It's not gravity.
Right. It's not exactly gravity. It's a lot more of like, well, you know, we've always kind of done it like this, and doing it that way is, we've just never thought that you should, right? We're against that. So a lot of this is more about what would be called norms in the international relations business.
I mean, isn't it even a bit worse than the way you describe, in the sense that the most powerful countries have set what's allowed?
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. The great game was part of the colonial, like the actual great game that occurred was part of the colonial battle between Imperial Britain and Imperial Russia about who would control India as a subject, as a colony. So the norms that we have are very much like, if two colonial powers are battling over who gets to subjugate someone, what is considered okay for them to do to each other? Mm-hmm. And it's sort of the colonized don't actually enter into it at all. They're not part of the game. They are the board.
Yeah.
Right? They're not pieces. They're where the game gets played. They don't even exist.
Yep.
So yeah, you know, the norms are very much established for and by the people in control. They're all from the perspective of, if you are a state and you want to perpetuate your state, what are things that you are allowed to do?
Yep.
That out of the way. Generally speaking, what's sort of agreed on these days is that state on state, that is, you know, if you're a government and you're spying on a government or the military, that's fair game. If you are spying on like defense contractors, like military technology, that's sort of the military by proxy. It's fair game because it's going to be for war, which is a thing that states are allowed to do. So, I mean, I bring it up because if you read like The Billion Dollar Spy, The U.S. believes that sort of like one of their best agents that they ever ran in Moscow was a guy who worked for a company developing forward-facing radar for airplanes. And it was sort of, it was look-down radar. So it was a radar that was supposed to be able to spot things in front and on the ground so that you could either defeat them or spot other things. Anyway, all of the stuff that he stole was technical specifications on how this worked, what its capabilities were, etc. And that was used to save over $1 billion in research. Those savings were passed on to defense contractors who were able to then use that either to defeat or to create their own, etc. That was purely economic, right? If you value what the spy did for you in terms of money and talk about how he saved you money and made your planes better, cheaper, you know, it's very hard, I think, to say that you're completely against any sort of economic espionage when...
Well, I mean, I'd actually take the counter view there that although there's a dollar value associated with it, it was in the context of a contest or competition, or was this during the Cold War?
Yeah.
So the intent there is to provide yourself with a military advantage. And
yes.
And perhaps as a pleasant side effect, it saves you a lot of money. But to me, that wasn't the purpose.
That's a fair judgment. But my point is just that when it is beneficial to the Five Eyes, there is absolutely no problem spying on defense contractors, stealing the work that they do, and giving it to your defense contractors, even if it's not for economic purposes, but simply to defeat it so that it can't be used against you.
Yeah, so there's a pleasant overlap of money and strategic goals.
Right.
so it's all about the intent. So it sounds to me that you're saying that at least historically in Five Eyes countries, it's fine to spy on a government. So in the East Timor case, you know, two governments mm-hmm. spying on each other, totally fine. Now, I thought we'd add a little bit more detail to the example. So East Timor's a hell of a lot poorer than Australia. Is that still fine? Does that change anything?
I think intent that you brought up is an important part, because in a way I think it matters what you do with the intelligence. So let's look slightly again at the stealing stuff from the Soviets to find out how their forward-looking radar works to defeat it. Yes, it does save you money, but that's not the primary intent. The primary intent is the military one, that it's going to help you in an actual conflict. So even though it saves money, that's sort of a side effect. That's not the goal. The goal is to be better at fighting them. So there's this big thing that you're trying to do, which is defeat them in a hot war, and everything you're doing until then is getting ready for that. So it's all part of this sort of military preparation, and that's the intent. When a large country like Australia spies on a small country, that is possibly fine in terms of, well, like it, in theory, it's completely fine, but it can get dodgy quickly. Like if you're spying on them and then you suddenly go, you know what, I don't really like their politics that much. Let's use some of the dirt that we've collected and leak that, so that we can topple their government and then try and get one of our guys in.
Yep.
That crosses the line from, you know, you can collect that dirt, that's fine, but then using it to destabilize their government and try and push someone else in is not fine.
Yep. It's not as easy to come up with examples where that intelligence can be used productively. Like, I think in this particular example, Australia has an interest in knowing how East Timorese politics is playing out and what the sort of different issues are. And mm-hmm. I don't think it comes to many people's minds as easily, but it's still possible that it can be used mm-hmm. positively for the East Timorese.
Right. I mean, if you know that certain policy thing is coming down the line, you can prepare your response ahead of time and not be caught off guard if it's you know, it doesn't need to be a negative thing. They might be saying like, look, we're going to change the visa requirements for Australians. You might want to know about that and then, you know, maybe petition them, get ready with a bundle of options to say, how about we not do that? That's a bad idea for you, you know, once they announce. That could be a thing, right?
Yeah.
It's a...
Yeah.
Benevolent use.
Yeah. So the spying itself is okay. Kind of the intent and what you do with it, possibly problematic, mm-hmm. could be problematic. I think it's much easier for people, most people, to think of examples where that potential intelligence could be used badly. Now, so the story mm-hmm. continues. So the allegation is that we bugged their cabinet room and we were in discussions with the East Timorese about the boundary for the Greater Sunrise oil field. Mm-hmm. And the story is that we argued and successfully used that intelligence to get a more beneficial divvying up of that oil field. So we got most of the profits. So what do you think? Is that fine? I guess let's start with the real example. East Timor is a poorer country. Australia is a much bigger, richer country.
Yeah, and, you know, Australia doesn't really have a lot of resources to extract itself. It needs to go and find someone else.
Yeah. So obviously this is terrible. Now, if the example was turned around and Australia was the poorer country and East Timor was rich and bountiful, I actually kind of feel okay about that.
You know, how about we put it the other way, that East Timor is poorer, but somehow they managed to flip someone on the Australian side mm-hmm. with a human asset. They use that access as like an agent of influence and access to information, and somehow they were able to get a better deal out of it than the Australians did.
Mm-hmm.
So if both sides were spying, but the East Timorese came out ahead
yep.
with their, would that make the Australian spying okay?
I think the Australian spying is not good because, and again, the allegation, it was used to basically change the Greater Sunrise oilfield boundaries. And I think that it mm-hmm. arises from the relative wealth of the two countries. And it's kind of separate from the spying itself. It's to do with how you treat other people in a mm-hmm. different country and what your goals as a country should be. So I think, to me, it's not a question of intelligence. It's a question of foreign policy, really.
See, I think I agree with that completely, in that making this a discussion about the ethics of spying sidesteps the more pressing issue of, is your foreign policy colonialist
yep.
and imperialist, or, you know, modern and progressive, and which one do you want?
Yep.
You know, how do you want to act in the world? And I think that is the much more relevant discussion, because obviously your foreign policy is what dictates how your espionage is going to be used,
yeah.
not the other way around.
Yeah. So in fact, talking about whether we bugged the cabinet or not is entirely a distraction from the whatever moral failures we have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what makes the story even worse is that, in this case, the benefits accrued mostly to a single company, which is Woodside Petroleum.
You know, if we're going to be talking about the espionage for benefiting a specific company, Latin America in the 50s and the CIA with like Chiquita Padana, for example, they were literally toppling governments to make sure that a single U.S. company did not have its business nationalized.
Right. Yeah.
And it's very hard to say anything is ethical about that, given the ongoing problems that persist in Latin America from all of the meddling that used to be done. And this is not like election meddling. This is like literally going in, putting up a coup, making sure that the old guys get executed and that the new ones come in and that they support you in not stealing from this one business. And so the U.S., in living memory, has done a lot of espionage work to benefit one single company, and saying, yeah, but like, you can't steal intellectual property, you know?
Yeah, okay, that's a good segue. I was going to mention Chinese intellectual property theft.
No, I was just going to say, like, it's hard to be angry at China for doing something to better their nation as part of their foreign policy, where they've decided we need to move up the value chain, and the way we're going to do that is to steal much information as we can and sort of leapfrog and tool up fast, rather than spending money we don't have and years we don't have to do it all from first principles.
Yeah, to me, stealing intellectual property has just been something that's always made sense from their point of view. And so, of course, if you've got the intellectual property, you don't want that to happen. And that also makes total sense. I've always found it slightly annoying when people portray it as a moral issue, because it's like, you know, both countries are acting in their national interest.
Right, absolutely. It's, you know, like, states don't have friends, they have interests.
Yeah, so one thing that occurred to me when you were talking about the Cold War example of stealing the billion-dollar spy. And in the Cold War, I imagine that the companies that benefited in the US weren't actually in commercial competition with the companies in the Soviet Union. And I guess that has changed.
Well, you lost out on that DOD.
Exactly.
Sequoia loses that DOD contract to Lockheed.
So that has changed in this, and I suppose that Chinese companies are in competition with US ones, and so there's a very real sense that intellectual property theft may have caused real harm to people in the US and allies. Like, companies have potentially shut because their stuff's been stolen.
Yeah, well, I think that's that becomes relevant, particularly if you look at sort of the 5G issue, because one of the things that happened there was that the Chinese saw 5G as a national strategic priority. And so they made sure that they sort of flooded the zone, and all of the protocol discussions had one guy from Cisco and 20 guys from Huawei. And that would be like a protocol discussion. And so kind of naturally, a lot of Huawei stuff got in there, and they happened to be like the first with the hardware, the first with things that support this spec, you know, some of the patents that allow that, and on and on. And part of that was because in the West, the Nortel and the Alcatel and basically the big companies that did telco equipment were allowed to go out of business, because that's what happens in a competitive market. You know, if your business is not competitive, then it goes under. And the Chinese didn't see it that way. They saw it as, this is a thing that's important to us. It's strategically vital that we have these industries. They're not sort of nice to haves. These are national strategic issues. And so they didn't allow that to happen. They were, you know, investing heavily and such. And then what happens? Huawei is the first one out with hardware. Huawei is the one that supports all the 5G stuff. And there's no Western alternatives, because the companies that could do that have gone out of business.
Yep. So I have a hard time thinking that the Chinese are immoral in that case. I think they're doing what makes sense. And I think, if anything, I think we were stupid in that case.
Absolutely, right? It's not necessarily a foreign policy issue here. It's more of a national strategy, a strategic understanding of where you want to go and what's important to that. And, you know, particularly in that case, I think there's a failure in the West. And I don't know that anyone has learned from it. It's not a moral issue. It's just were they better at it or not. Speaking of like morals and what is okay, I wanted to talk about the OPM.
Yep, OPM, so the Office of Personnel Management, which held the US clearance information and was hacked by the Chinese maybe, what, 5 or 6 years ago or something like that?
Yeah, around then. And absolutely massive failure for the US, huge win for the Chinese. I mean, that's a career highlight for anyone who pulls that off. If the U.S. had managed to do that, there would be books coming out of the CIA by various different people, just like how somehow everyone that went on the Osama bin Laden raid was the guy who shot him in the face. The CIA would be producing books. Everyone was in charge of that operation.
Yep.
But yeah, like that's just a massive win. And I think we do need to remember that espionage, even when you lose, and you know, doesn't make it unethical or immoral.
Yeah. The US people I've spoken to about that, the reaction they have is kind of shock rather than horror, if you know what I mean. Like, it's not that was out of bounds. That was like, oh my God, that's so terrible for us.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, anyone that you or I talk to is a little bit closer to the trenches than people who get quoted in newspapers for that sort of thing. I remember at the time there was a lot of outrage from more the political side than from the everyone who's in the game was like, oh man, I thought we did have a goalie.
We got done bad.
Look up and realize that the other side is just scoring on an open net all the time. Yeah, so I think people realize that fair game, they got us good. That was a bad one. But what's interesting was at the same time, they were hacking private companies, United Airlines, American Airlines, the hotel companies,
Marriott,
Anthem.
Yep.
Yeah, and Anthem
health insurance,
which is the one. Right. And here, the belief is that they were building up a Facebook using that data, a Facebook of government people, because Anthem was, that's the health insurance that the U.S. government provides to, you know, federal employees. I believe it was United is the one that they all get their miles on. So that's the one that has the contract. And I think it was Marriott you know, that's the one that they stay at. So basically you could look at, you know, everyone that flies out of Dulles Airport and stays at the Marriott. And then you can sort of pick your CIA and NSA agents out of a hat from that. And here they were hacking private companies, but it was for state goals.
Yep.
You know, these are espionage related goals. It's counterintelligence. It's not economic, as we would say.
Yep.
And I don't think anyone says that that is out of bounds.
I think I read an indictment for one of those cases where they talked about economic gain. And I remember thinking at the time, or when I read the indictment, that was just stupid. That's not what it was about. And it kind of undermines your argument going on about economic espionage when it clearly wasn't. It's just stupid.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is a particularly bad example of trying to call it economic espionage. But, you know, I think the East Timor thing is a good example of why the definition of economic espionage that does get used, which is that if the state helps an individual company or companies to compete better in the market, that is economic espionage. But if the state helps itself to oppress a smaller state or to get a, you know, better terms on a treaty, that's different. That's not economic it's not economic espionage. It's something else, even though the impact is economic.
Yeah, that's a bit.
That's a bit gerrymandered. You know, it's a little bit like everything we do is a norm, everything they do is a crime. I think it's just gerrymandered. I think they've done these things where it's like, look, it's not stealing because we're on this side of the thing and you're not doing. It's very much like, if you look at it this way and squint, you can see how what we're doing is okay. But if you tilt your head a little bit and, you know, open your eyes a bit more, you can see how what they did is way over the line.
That's right.
You know, we're inbounds, they're over the line.
Whether they
it is cut.
Yeah. Whether it's a foul or not depends upon the camera angle.
Yeah. It's,
one of the examples I read about, it's called the Great Grain Robbery. And I think it was in the late 70s or 80s. And the story is that the Russian embassy in Washington had collection on phone lines. And they got knowledge of the the grain harvest in the States, and they used that to play in the grain market to make a huge amount of money by buying or selling at the wrong time or something like that. And so many of those things have, well, to be clear, I think that's like perfectly fine. and I think part of it is because that time in the Cold War was closest thing you can get to a total conflict without actual conflict. Like there's two sides, there's blocks, you're against each other, you're trying to do what you can to benefit your side. And it was also clearly because it was intercepting communications for the Department of Agriculture, also fine. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But of course, it does end up with an economic benefit, right?
Right. Yeah, so I think a lot of it is very difficult to slice and come out with a clear set of rules that is, you know, objective and fair for everyone. I think you can kind of say, right, the state should not be trying to help individual companies. Like, that seems wrong. The state should not necessarily be, like, and the state should not be oppressing smaller states, you know, using espionage. You know, you can see these things, but then it gets into like specifics and it gets a lot harder.
Well, I'm not even sure. Like, so both those examples, you shouldn't help an individual company. To me, it depends what you're trying to achieve, right? So if it just happens that you've got a single company, but they're the only ones that are in some dramatically important technology, then, well, I'm not going to not try and get that technology because I've only got a single company, right? And then the second example, you shouldn't oppress a smaller state. I think that's right. I agree with it. But that to me is a kind of moral value based on me as a person, not me as a state. And if I'm the big state, of course I should just oppress everyone because, well, not necessarily, but it depends on your values, right?
Yeah. It's one of those, like, what is the morality of the strong do what they can and the weak suffer what they must? We hit on it earlier, and it's a thing that I think is what matters, is that it's the morality is less about the espionage itself and more about the policy behind it. Espionage generally does not drive policy. You know, it's a tool that gets used.
So just to sum up, we think mostly the actual act of intelligence is fine. It's really what you do with it and what your intent is. And we're both a bit skeptical of people's intentions. But thanks a lot.
Hey, it was an excellent discussion, and see you next week.